This material has been approved for public release. Distribution is unlimited. In the modern world, not all dangers are visible or obvious. In fact, some of the deadliest dangers cannot be seen by the naked eye. From purpose-built weapons to naturally occurring infectious diseases, the race to find life-saving solutions to chemical or biological threats is never-ending. The threats evolve, so must the solutions. Join Carl Brown from the Defense Threat Reduction Agency Joint Science and Technology Office for Chemical and Biological Defense as we discuss the science of fighting these invisible threats by unraveling the complexities and scientific challenges of a battle that is everywhere.
Today, my guest is Dr. John Hannon, the Division Chief of Digital Battlespace Management at the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, where cutting-edge research using artificial intelligence and machine learning is shaping the future of chembio defense. John, welcome.
Thank you, Carl.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. What's your background and what qualifies you to lead this effort?
My background actually is in meteorology. So that's how I got involved in chembio defense to begin with. It was to actually work on pretty sophisticated computer models that do the weather. So you hear the weather folks on TV all the time talking about the model told me this and told me that. And so I have a extensive background in numerical weather prediction and numerical modeling in general. So I understand those complexities of the models and how they can take some time to run, but then also some of the ways that we might, you know, address these run times with these machine learning applications.
Tell us what you do in the Digital Battlespace Management Division.
So what we do in the division is we're essentially data consumers. And what we try to do is take this enormous amount of data that flows off of equipment, whether it be diagnostic devices or detection devices or what have you, and digitize that. So that's where the digital part of battlespace management comes in. And then essentially call that information into something that's usable in terms of a simple, in some cases, decision support capability. So really think of all the information in terms of ones and zeros that flow off of these devices. How do you actually make sense of that and then contextualize it for the warfighter to allow them to make some sort of decision on the back end without having to comb through the data themselves?
Okay, so this concept of digital battlespace management, what does that mean?
So the battlespace management is a term that's codified in doctrine. So that's a fairly common term that resonates with most of our warfighters. But as we've moved into the last 15, 20 years, this concept of the digital component of it, being able to comb through massive amounts of data, and you start to think of things like artificial intelligence and machine learning, that on the front end is a more appropriate name for what it is that we're doing these days. It's not so much laying out maps and charts and trying to make decisions off of that, off of templates or what have you, but actually putting fairly sophisticated computer algorithms to the test to allow us to go through massive amounts of data that we could not typically go through in the past.
And so we talk about massive amounts of data and computers. This concept of machine learning and artificial intelligence, which are paired together as ML and AI, for folks who don't know what those terms mean, talk a little bit about what ML AI is.
So machine learning is really what it actually says. It's the ability of a machine, in this case a computer, to learn something given enough information. So it's not dissimilar to the way a human being learns. You know, you learn over time as you're exposed to more and more things and are able to assimilate information that comes in through time. Computer algorithms are very similar, except that, of course, they have to be fed the relevant information to make decisions on. So the concept actually dates back, you know, probably 20 years or more to essentially teach things that are non-animate objects or computers to make decisions on their own in some cases. When you think of artificial intelligence, it could be, we always talk about supervised versus unsupervised machine learning, but basically allow computers and algorithms that are somewhat sophisticated to ingest a lot of data to make some decisions off of that data, or at least be able to interpret the data and find subtle characteristics within that data.
The term artificial intelligence was coined in 1956 in a proposal for a two-month 10-man study of artificial intelligence submitted by John McCarthy of Dartmouth College, Marvin Minsky of Harvard University, Nathaniel Rochester at IBM, and Claude Shannon of Bell Telephone Laboratories. AI implies an agent interacting with a data set to learn to create responses to maximize its chance of successfully achieving a goal. The term machine learning was coined in 1959 by Arthur Samuel, an American pioneer in the field of computer gaming and artificial intelligence. Machine learning employs various approaches to teach computers to accomplish tasks where no fully satisfactory algorithm is available. ML learns and predicts based on passive observations. So the Defense Threat Reduction Agency is a component of something called the Chemical and Biological Defense Program, often referred to as CBDP. And the ChemBio Defense Program does what?
So the ChemBio Defense Program as a whole, obviously, is something that is a larger program under the Army as the executive agent to look across the board at ChemBio Defense development, S&T and acquisition development, from basic research all the way to procurement and fielding. For all the services. In a nutshell, that's what the ChemBio Defense Program is and what it's after.
Okay, so for a layman, is it fair for me to say develop and deliver tools that are specifically used in ChemBio Defense applications so soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines don't die?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Although there's also overlap all the time with what we do, and maybe aim toward that goal, but dual use technologies tend to spin off from what we do as well. So it can go well beyond just ChemBio Defense.
How long has your division been focusing on ML AI, and was that always the focus?
You know, machine learning and AI was something that was a bit of a fantasy maybe 15 or 20 years ago. It was a great idea, and there were lots of ways to mathematically kind of lay it out how you would do it. But the lack of input data and the lack of some of the computational capabilities really inhibited that. So, about 4 years ago is when we really started in earnest looking at it. And really it was initially to get after some of these breaking down of the complex physics-based models and codes and doing something a little bit quicker if possible. And that naturally bled across all of CB, so it came out of the division pretty rapidly. And now you see AI being applied to optimal drug discovery, and all these other areas that are within all the technical divisions in ChemBio now. One of the aha moments for us was actually a student intern contest at Pacific Northwest National Lab, if you can believe that. So we sponsor this contest. We've been doing it, I don't know, maybe 6 or 8 years now, where every summer a bunch of promising young students come in and they're given a challenge set that we give to them. And they work on that for about 6 to 8 weeks and then present the results to us. And we have a little judging contest and such. So we gave them this very problem I just mentioned about the dispersion issue and asked them to look at neural networks or something akin to a neural network as a possible surrogate for full physics-based dispersion calculations. And sure enough, we actually came up with something very, very promising on the back end of that. And that's since transitioned over to some of our other partners. When you can tap into industry, especially if maybe purposefully you keep a little bit of information back from a historical perspective and allow them to develop the ideas of what they think it is and then also how they would tackle a problem without any a priori knowledge of what's been done in the past, that's actually, there's a lot of power there because that's tapping into some fresh ideas and fresh minds that have not been doing the same thing for 15 or 20 years or are a bit stuck in a rut, so to speak.
Okay, and so how would you apply that sort of approach to warfighters and the needs of our warfighters and how they might apply machine learning or artificial intelligence and the tool sets that you provide?
So there's so many examples to go through, but I'll pick one that I'm familiar with, and I think it's maybe the older example for us. So in this particular division, and Ditcher is actually pretty famous for this, is actually providing consequence assessment tools And so think of dispersion models. Something bad happens, maybe it's a chemical facility or something like that that's been either compromised by, you know, a weapon strike or just an accidental release of something. You know, that chemical or substance is going to get out into the atmosphere and it's going to disperse downwind based on the meteorology. And so there are complex models that DITRA has built over the years to do the full physics of all that. What are the kinetic, you know, on target strike type interactions? And then what is that really complex turbulent atmospheric flow? You know, all of those things that can take hours and hours. And then, you know, the chemicals themselves can have different properties that like secondary evaporation properties that take more time to do. So what we've done in a machine learning perspective is we can, when in the background, run these simulations with various, you know, slight changes between them hundreds of thousands of times. And what machine learning will allow you to do, instead of, you know, when there actually is a real incident, instead of having to run the full physics, it has already learned from these hundreds of thousands previous runs what would be the most likely outcome downwind from a certain given set of inputs on the front side. So that's one way that machine learning can be applied to really break down complex physics-based problems into something that can run in milliseconds as opposed to potentially even hours.
What are some of the major challenges your group has encountered as you've moved along this path, particularly as it refers to or applies to the use of ML AI?
Trying to coordinate across the government, across the DOD in this area and not be duplicative of what other people are doing is a challenge. So that is why there is the JAIC now, the Joint Artificial Intelligence Center, that runs herd on all of that for the DOD. Having a group like the JAIC helps standardize what that data looks like, how it's collected, how it's stored, how it's accessed by everybody, so that we can create these larger voluminous data sets for everybody to leverage. That is standard. And, you know, once you have that standardization piece, it allows you to compare things a little bit more easily, but also allows development of new and improved algorithms on the same data set that might have been used for original development. So the JAIC has that challenge to not just coordinate what's going on, but also hopefully in the near future provide large data sets that everybody can access. And in return, we should be doing similar things as adding to that body of knowledge or body of data to help the JAIC succeed and all of our partners.
It seems like every day there's a new commoditized technology, smart watches with fitness trackers, rings, jewelry, and accessories that are all creating a democratization of biometric data. There are risks. But what are the possibilities when this data is harnessed for life-saving technologies?
So that's something that's been a success for us, and we were able to, about 3 years ago, partner with a company called Philips Healthcare, which I think everybody is familiar with. If you've ever been in a hospital, you're certainly familiar with all the diagnostics that get hooked up to you that say Philips on it. But we were able to partner with them and mine large amounts of data from hospital patients and essentially develop a machine learning algorithm that can get you that early indication of sickness. We've since translated that to these devices that you can buy off the shelf. I'm pointing to a Garmin Forerunner 945 right now and an Oura Ring. And these will provide you the kind of information, not as nice and clean as some of the hospital grade stuff, but the same variables will flow off of these and into that algorithm. So that's an example of something that we've done very recently to leverage machine learning to mine large hospital or health data sets to get that early warning of infection.
Can you talk a little bit about the acceptance or reluctance to accept the science behind the gadgets?
So we're leveraging technologies that are already out there and well accepted and adopted in the community. And really just doing that little piece that we have to do to get after the ChemBio specific applications. So I think getting it adopted is almost a no-brainer. People are already, you know, young soldiers coming into the Army right now are already wearing these things. And working with our commercial partners like the Garmins of the world or the Fitbits and getting these kinds of capabilities on smartwatches now is something that we're looking to do, and I think it's going to be a great win for the program.
is there a dark side? What are some of the risks or downsides to these advances that you might be able to talk about?
So anything that has to do with data transmission, there's always a risk of spoofing. So that is an issue. You know, if we're interested in outfitting, you know, a certain number of soldiers with these devices, there is also the concern that somebody might be doing something or get a hold of the data, breakthrough security protocols that are in place, and basically alter that signal for some other reason. Maybe it's to indicate that people are becoming sick when they're not, or vice versa. You know, holding down that signal of people that are becoming sick and saying everything is great. So that's one big issue, and that's where we, on the science and technology side, that we're always well aware of that. But when we harden these things, as we call it, and have our advanced developers take these on and field them, that's their lane, and they're very well versed and very good at doing this. I would say another piece, though, this is a little bit taking a bit of a tangent, but being a modeler myself, having information and well-known physical properties and processes to validate against are that's something you don't have with AI and ML. So there's a little bit of a black box approach that you have to take and almost trust that it works. But it's very difficult to deconstruct that problem backward and say that it this model validates this machine learning. You could say the end result validates, but you know, why did it validate? What did I have in the middle here that worked out so well, or maybe didn't work out well if it doesn't validate well?
In October 2020, a Scottish soccer club announced its home games would feature live video coverage courtesy of a newly installed AI-powered camera system. However, the AI ball tracking technology repeatedly confused the soccer ball with the referee's bald head. It's a funny story, but when warfighter lives are on the line, there's no margin for error, and such misunderstandings would cease to be funny. How do you see this space where we're leveraging MLAI and the challenges that are presented by MLAI, how do you see it evolving or changing over time? Where are we going? What's next?
Well, I really think as I see things just changing in the last 4 years within our own department, I think the medical side of the house really stands to leverage this probably more than anybody else. You know, optimizing the way drugs are developed is something that we're probably spending the bulk of our basic research money that's allocated toward AI ML right now on that type of application. So I think the speed at which you can determine let's think of a pandemic as an example, but what the problem is, you know, what is this new pathogen that's out there and deconstructing, you know, genomic properties and things like that. But also then the rapid development of diagnostics and therapeutics and vaccines on the back end, that's something that could speed up that, you know, sometimes 10-year process using these types of applications.
Getting medical treatment approved can be a time-consuming process for a variety of reasons, but there are decades and decades of approved treatments that may have applications that haven't been noticed or considered. In other words, a huge data set of already approved treatments that AI/ML just might be able to help bring to bear on novel chemical or biological threats. Where are the places where we could be leveraging MLAI, but we're not?
We tend to, in the division that I'm looking after, gravitate toward making sense of, we call it all data fusion or all source fusion. That has been something that has been kicked around, that particular concept, for as long as I've been in this business, for sure. Trying to make sense of not just the chemical and biological sensors we might have fielded, but any other non-chem bio sensor. It could be an artillery calculation, or, you know, name your other piece of information. So that's an area that we've talked about forever, but we've never been able to really crack the nut on. And I think the AI/ML part of this area or that application is probably the biggest bang for the buck that we could potentially get going in short order. So the let's divorce that a little bit from the medical part of it that I just mentioned. But we talk about integrated early warning all the time, but we've never been able to do that integrate piece. So integrating all the different sources that are there. So AIML is poised to really make quick advances in that space if we are able to tie all of those feeds together, which is that the devil's typically in the details there and working across different services that are on different domains and different types of environments to tap into all the relevant data. That's an area that could be a huge splash here in the near future.
Why should anybody care about the investments that we're making in ML AI? I mean, what's the real takeaway or benefit that we gain, both at a big picture level and kind of at a put something in your hands level? Why does this matter?
So on a big picture level, I think it's no surprise to anybody, and everybody's familiar with, you hear bits and pieces on the news all the time about how quickly data doubles or triples, right? And I don't even know what the metric is we're using to measure the amount of data that's created every day. So when you think about the warfighter trying to make quick decisions in an operationally relevant environment, so something that's moving pretty quickly, the last thing you want is more information to have to comb through, right? So, but you would like to be able to discern information from this vast amount of data. So the AIML applied to that would allow these quick decisions to be made on the fly without having to just continuously pour through and drown, essentially, in the data that's being created and coming off of different platforms. At the cutting edge, we're talking about pushing things out now to handheld devices like phones and other tablets that people can use in the field that are at the tactical edge that may not even have connectivity, but some of this back-end processing has already gone on, and they're able to make, again, quick decisions off of information that has already been sorted through really and processed.
Thank you for joining Dr. Hannon and I today on Invisible Battlefields, Inside the Science of Chemical and Biological Defense. DITRA enables the Department of Defense, the U.S. government, and international partners to counter and deter weapons of mass destruction and emerging threats. Learn more about our efforts by following us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Keywords, Defense Threat Reduction Agency.